Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Yeah.
We're diving into a really landmark Supreme Court case today, Brewer v. Williams. It's a case that really digs into a devastating crime and explores all these complexities of the Sixth Amendment and the right to counsel.
Yeah, it's, you know, not just about the tragic murder itself, but really gets into that that very delicate balance between effective police work,
right,
and then safeguarding those constitutional rights of every suspect, even the ones accused of the most, you know, awful things.
Exactly. And we've got some pretty amazing source material for this deep dive. We have excerpts from the case brief itself, you know, that lays out the legal framework, the big issues, and just the facts of the case. Plus, we're going to go deep into that majority opinion written by Justice Stewart.
It'll be like stepping right back in time to 1977, right into the Supreme Court to hear these arguments.
So let's set the scene. Imagine Christmas Eve, 1968, Des Moines, Iowa. 10-year-old Pamela Powers vanishes from the YMCA.
Awful.
Just a terrible tragedy.
Yeah.
And soon after, Robert Williams, who had recently escaped from a mental hospital, he's spotted leaving the YMCA carrying a bundle, right? And this really raises suspicions.
Yeah, I mean, right away, you know, red flags all over the place. And the very next day, they find his car abandoned miles away, and they issue a warrant for his arrest for abduction.
And that's where all the legal maneuvering really begins.
Mm.
Williams, he actually follows the advice of his attorney in Des Moines, Henry McKnight, and he surrenders to the police in Davenport, Iowa.
Seems like a smart move, right? Like, he's read his Miranda rights, and in McKnight, he's adamant that the police do not question Williams until they can all meet in person back in Des Moines.
So the Des Moines police, they agree, right? They agree to transport him back without any questioning. They even reaffirm this agreement to another attorney in Davenport, Kelly, who's also representing Williams at this point.
So on the surface, everybody seems to be on the same page, but it's a long drive back to Des Moines, and that's where things take a real turn.
That's where this famous Christian burial speech comes in.
Right.
During this long drive, Detective Leeming, who knows about Williams' religious beliefs and his mental state, he starts talking about the weather, you know, seemingly casual, mentions the approaching snowstorm. And he kind of subtly brings up how hard it would be to find a body if it were buried under all that snow.
Right.
Almost appealing to Williams' empathy.
Yeah.
And then he says, and I quote, "I feel that the parents of this little girl should be entitled to a Christian burial for the little girl who was snatched away from them on Christmas Eve and murdered."
Chilling words.
Chilling. And I mean, Leeming, he knows, right? He knows how vulnerable Williams is, and he uses that. He uses this powerful emotional language, and it works. Williams breaks down and leads the police right to Pamela's body.
You might think, okay, case closed, but not so fast. Because Williams' lawyers, they file a motion to suppress.
Basically, they're saying because his right to counsel was violated during that car ride, all the evidence they got, the location of the body, everything should be inadmissible in court. And the trial court, they actually deny this motion. They say that Williams, he waived his right to counsel by speaking to the detective. But then the Iowa Supreme Court, they come back with a split decision. They uphold the conviction. But some justices, they strongly dissent.
And this is where you see that tension, right, between, on the one hand, you know, law enforcement's desire to solve this crime, and on the other hand, the absolute need to protect individual rights. Can police, you know, use tactics like this, even if they lead to a confession?
And it doesn't even stop there. It goes to the federal district court, which actually sides with Williams, states unequivocally that his Sixth Amendment right to counsel was totally denied.
Yeah. And they even go further, you know, they even question whether his Miranda rights were violated and if his statements were truly voluntary at all. But the fight, it's not over. The case goes all the way up to the Supreme Court. And that's where Justice Stewart's majority opinion becomes, well, really central to this story.
And that's what we're going to explore next in part two of our deep dive.
All right, so let's unpack Justice Stewart's majority opinion here. What's so interesting is how he frames this whole issue. You know, he emphasizes that this case, this isn't just about finding Pamela Powers.
All right.
It's about upholding this Sixth Amendment right to counsel for everyone,
yeah,
not just for Robert Williams.
Because if the police can sidestep the rules for one person, then where does it end, right?
Exactly. Stewart reminds us, this right to counsel, it's crucial at every single stage of the process, especially these critical moments before a trial even starts. He even cites Powell v. Alabama, which was a, you know, a landmark case from 1932 that underscores the importance of having legal representation right from the get-go.
So he's grounding his argument in solid legal precedent here, not just, you know, coming up with something new.
Exactly. And then he turns his attention to Detective Leeming's actions. He doesn't mince words. He states that Leeming deliberately and designedly set out to elicit information from Williams, even though he knew, right, he knew that Williams had lawyers and wasn't supposed to be questioned.
So Leeming, I mean, it sounds like he knew what he was doing was wrong, but he did it anyway. I mean, was he so focused on getting this confession that he was willing to just cross the line?
Well, I mean, that's the question at the heart of this whole case, isn't it? He certainly was determined to solve it. Justice Stewart, he makes this compelling comparison to Messiah v. United States, a 1964 case where the Supreme Court overturned a conviction because they got these incriminating statements, but they were secretly obtained from the defendant after he'd already been indicted.
So even though Leeming wasn't using a hidden microphone or a wiretap or anything like a Messiah, it's the same principle, right?
Right. It's about respecting the process. Doesn't matter how they get those incriminating statements. What matters is that they got them without the lawyer present.
Okay, so Stewart, he clearly establishes that Williams' right to counsel was violated here. But the lower courts, they said that Williams waived that right. So how does Stewart address that?
This is where things get really interesting. So the Iowa courts, they focused on the fact that Williams, he didn't explicitly say, like, I want my lawyer during that drive. But Stewart throws this legal curveball. He says, waiving a fundamental right like this, the right to counsel, it requires more than just understanding it.
Right.
It requires a deliberate and intentional relinquishment of that right.
So it's not enough to just stay silent. You have to actively give up the right.
Exactly. And Stewart, he points out that Williams, he consistently relied on his lawyer's advice. He spoke to them before he surrendered. He spoke to them after being arrested. And he kept saying he would tell the whole story after he saw McKnight back in Des Moines.
So even though he didn't say lawyer, his actions show how much he relied on his attorneys.
Exactly. And Stewart drives this point home. I mean, he states that Williams had effectively asserted his right to counsel by having secured attorneys at both ends of the automobile trip, both of whom, acting as his agents, had made clear to the police that no interrogation was to occur during the journey. He's emphasizing that Williams, he knew about this agreement, and given his reliance on his attorney's advice, there's no reason to believe he went back on it.
Okay, I'm starting to see why this case is so important. Really clarifies what a valid waiver of the right to counsel actually means.
It's a landmark decision for a reason, and Stewart doesn't stop there. He emphasizes that even if Williams could have waived his right, there's no evidence that he actually did.
Right.
Remember, the burden of proof is on the state to show a clear and intentional waiver, not on the defendant to prove that they didn't waive it.
That's a crucial point. Shifting that responsibility from the individual to the state. You just imagine the impact this had on police practices across the country.
Huge. Oh, absolutely. Suddenly, it wasn't enough to just read someone their Miranda rights. They had to rethink those interrogation tactics.
Yeah.
Had to demonstrate a clear and intentional waiver of those rights. But of course, this is just one side of the story.
Right.
We still have those dissenting opinions to explore. All right, let's get into those dissenting opinions. This is where, you know, things get a little spicy.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Chief Justice Berger, he called the majority's decision just intolerable.
Wow.
Said it punishes the public for the mistakes of the police.
So he's saying the ends justify the means.
Mm-hmm.
Like finding that victim, you know, and ensuring justice for her, that outweighs any procedural missteps.
Yeah, that's the heart of it. He truly believed that Williams was guilty, and the evidence, no matter how it was obtained, should have been admissible. He thought, you know, excluding it like this just because of a technicality, well, as he saw it, that just lets a guilty man go free.
That's a tough stance, but I can see where he's coming from.
Yeah.
What about the other justices? Did they share that view?
Justice White, along with Blackmun and Rehnquist, they also dissented. And their focus was on that idea of waiver. They argued that Williams, he clearly understood his rights and made a conscious choice to give them up.
But didn't Stewart address that in his majority opinion?
Yeah, he did. But they interpreted the facts differently. They pointed out that Williams got those Miranda warnings multiple times. He even acknowledged he understood them and, you know, said he was willing to talk eventually. They saw his decision to tell them where the body was as a genuine change of heart, not, you know, as a result of Detective Leeming's persuasion.
So they're saying that Williams was in control the whole time, making his own choices.
Yeah, that's their perspective. And they argued that, you know, having to get this like explicit waiver every time a suspect speaks, it'd be an unreasonable burden on law enforcement, you know, and would really just hinder investigations.
Okay, so we've got this clear divide among the justices on this issue. But what about those concurring opinions? Did any justices, agree with Stewart's outcome, but had some other points they wanted to make?
Oh, absolutely. Justice Marshall, who, was a huge advocate for civil rights, he agreed with Stewart, but he really condemned Leeming's actions.
I bet he wasn't a fan of that Christian burial speech, huh?
Not at all. Not at all. He saw it as totally manipulative, you know, calculated to exploit a vulnerable suspect. He even quoted Justice Brandeis's dissent in Olmstead v. United States, where he warns, cautions against the government, becoming a lawbreaker to pursue justice.
That's a powerful point. What about the other concurring opinions?
So Justice Powell, who, wrote the majority opinion in Stone v. Powell, he agreed that, William's rights were violated, but he brought up this really interesting question about the exclusionary rule.
You mean that rule that prevents illegally obtained evidence from being used?
Exactly. He suggested that, the reasoning behind Stone v. Powell, which was about Fourth Amendment violations, well, maybe that logic could also apply to Sixth Amendment violations, like in this case.
So he's saying that there might be exceptions to that rule, even when evidence is obtained illegally.
Yeah, he didn't give a definite answer, but it's a thought-provoking point.
Yeah.
And it's fueled a lot of legal debate. And then there's Justice Stevens.
What about him?
Justice Stevens, he focused on what this all meant for, the integrity of the legal system, like the role of lawyers in making sure things are fair, upholding the rule of law.
So he saw what the state did, as a breach of trust with Williams's lawyer, which could undermine the whole system.
Absolutely. He saw it as like a betrayal and, something that could really erode the public's confidence in the justice system as a whole.
Wow. What a journey. I mean, this deep dive into Brewer v. Williams, it's really shown us the human side of these really complex legal cases.
Yeah. It's a reminder that the law, it's not just, about abstract principles. It's about real people, real choices, and the consequences, of those choices.
We saw how what seemed like a straightforward murder investigation, it takes this turn because of legal strategy and a detective's words, a suspect's vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
And it really makes you think about the limits of police power, about that, that delicate balance between protecting society, but also upholding individual rights. Mm. And that constant effort to make sure everyone gets a fair trial, even the ones accused of really terrible things.
And that's just the beginning. This case, it sparked decades of debate about the exclusionary rule, the Sixth Amendment, and just, what tactics police can use during interrogations. It's still cited in legal arguments and scholarly discussions. It's still shaping how we think about criminal justice.
This deep dive, this has given you a glimpse into all those complexities, but there's always so much more to explore. And that brings us to our final thought for today.
With all the advancements in technology, surveillance, how might the principles from Brewer v. Williams apply to how we collect digital evidence? Is a suspect's right to counsel violated if their smartphone, their data, is accessed without a warrant or a lawyer present? Just something to think about as we navigate this ever-evolving world of law enforcement in the digital age.